Presidential staff turnover is a fact of life. First years of presidencies can be particularly chaotic. But one analysis shows that President Trump's turnover exceeds that of the last five presidents. For why this might be so and what it means to the bureaucracy, we turn to Katie Dunn Tempus, Senior Fellow in Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution. Ms. Tempus, good to have you on.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Now, you've written a pretty detailed article. Why don't we first set the methodology that you use so that you could have comparative numbers from one administration to the next?
Well, I became interested in the senior levels, the turnover within the very senior level of the White House staff, and it includes individuals who are on the White House staff as well as in the executive office of the president. So that includes people in the Office of Management and Budget, the Office of National Drug Control Policy, et cetera. And in 1981, the National Journal, which was a weekly magazine back then, during the first, roughly around April or June of the first year of a new administration, they would publish a special edition called Decision Makers. And it was generally written by about five or six journalists from the National Journal, and it was their perception of who the most influential staff members were of a particular administration. They did this in 1981 for Ronald Reagan. They did it again in 1989 for George H.W. Bush. They did it in 1993 for Bill Clinton. They did it in 2001 for George W. Bush, and then they did it again in 2009 for Barack Obama. So basically what I did is I created a spreadsheet that showed these individuals, and I monitored their turnover from year one to year two to year three to year four, and if it was a two-term presidency, all the way through, to try to get a sense for how much turnover there was within these administrations. And I define turnover as any movement. It could be a promotion within the White House or the Executive Office of the President. It could be a resignation, or it could be a firing. So that, to me, represented turnover. And in the year of 2017, the National Journal no longer published this special edition called Decision Makers. So myself and a journalist named Madison Alder from Bloomberg Law got together and teamed up, and we basically took an inventory of every title that was ever mentioned in those prior five editions, so every decision-making title ever. And we sort of broke them down into what we call Tier 1 titles, meaning that they were mentioned in all five editions. And one example of this would be the Chief of Staff. Then we broke it down into those titles that were mentioned four out of five administrations, three out of five, and two out of five. Another unique factor that we noticed when we looked at all this data is that with every new administration, the National Journal introduced, on average, about 19 new titles. So what I did is I, with my expertise, I looked at a Politico publication that listed White House staff as of January 25th, 2017, and I went through and picked out assistants to the president and deputy assistants to the president that were not already on the decision-makers list, and that's how I acquired 19 new titles.
Okay, so you have a comparable database then from presidency to presidency is the bottom line here, correct?
Right. I would say it's apples to apples, and we did the best we could to create the fairest sample that would have been representative if the National Journal had done it this year.
And what did you find with respect to the Trump administration?
His turnover was basically off the charts. The previous leader in first-year turnover was Ronald Reagan, with 17% of his senior staff members departing in that first year. With Donald J. Trump, it was 34%, so it was double the previous high rate. And if you want to look back more recently, Barack Obama just had 9% turnover within his first year, and George W. Bush just had 6%. So if you compare him to recent presidents, you know, he more than tripled Obama. If you go back and look at the five presidents and pick the one with the highest turnover, it would be Reagan with 17, and he doubled that. So it is clearly off the charts. The other unique finding is that within the Tier 1 appointments, there are 12 appointments that appeared in all five previous decision-maker editions. And within that, Donald Trump lost half, six of the 12, whereas Barack Obama only lost one, and George W. Bush did not lose any of those very, very senior staff members.
Talking about the Trump administration, I mean, why do you suppose this might be the case?
There's obviously a lot of factors that affect turnover, and it's really hard to isolate exactly what's influencing it. But one thing that I noticed that's very different from prior administrations is that the nature of President Trump's campaign itself could be described as an insurgency campaign, and it was very unconventional. It had a much smaller staff, and it had a lot of people from the private sector, as opposed to people who had experience in prior presidential campaigns. I mean, there were some, but compared to other presidential campaigns, it was smaller in size. So generally what happens is that first year when presidents are, after they've won the election and they're staffing their White House, they generally draw largely from their campaign staff. So in this case, President Trump tended to draw or ask a lot of people who had did not have prior White House experience to serve in the administration. The second point I would make is that he emphasized loyalty over any other characteristic. And so a lot of people who might have had the requisite skill set and the requisite White House staff experience may have not been included in the recruiting pool because they did not have the loyalty or the attachment to President Trump.
Sure.
It's also the case that there were many Republicans who came out over the course of his campaign and signed what they called Never Trump letters. And those people, many of them had experience in the George W. Bush, presidency and worked in the White House, but they were excluded from the recruiting pool. So that meant that President Trump really relied on a lot of people who did not have prior White House experience, sometimes not any government experience, and a lot from the private sector. And what that does is that can create, you know, a mismatch in skills and probably setting some people up for a little bit of failure.
We're speaking with Katie Dunn Tenpas, Senior Fellow for Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution. I guess if you're old enough, you would call it the Burt Lance effect.
Yeah. I mean, President Carter, I don't have the data for President Carter because National Journal didn't start doing this till 1981. But, you know, the knock on President Carter was that he brought a lot of people from Georgia who had experience with Georgia state government, but he was unwilling to sort of reach out to the Washington community and take experienced hands on his White House staff. And that may have set him up for some early missteps. And,
sure.
You know, I have to, you know, it's important to point out that a lot of presidents experience missteps and turnover and during that first year where they're trying to figure out how the White House works, what the role of the presidency is in our political system. And, you know, it's prime time to be making mistakes. So President Trump is not the only one who had some missteps and needed to fire people and needed to rearrange his White House staff, needed to bring more discipline. I think most people would cite Bill Clinton as sort of, you know, an example where they remember that there were a lot of missteps, and they seemed to, at that point, the perception was a lot of young people were in these White House positions and they didn't have enough experience, and that's what led to a difficult first year.
Does this have any effect on the standing workforce, the career workforce, the senior executives, or is it pretty much just occurring and being cared about in the political sphere?
You know, to the extent that a particular White House office, for instance, the White House Office of Cabinet Affairs that reaches out to all the departments and agencies, they're trying to coordinate policies with these various departments and agencies. I imagine if there was turnover within that office, that could be problematic for the workforce. You know, certainly the chief of staff, when there's turnover with that, that person is sort of captaining the ship and steering the ship. And so if they have different philosophical positions or ideological positions, that could change things for the workforce. I think when there's a very high degree of turnover, as there is in this administration, that could make the senior executive service people concerned about sort of the stability and not knowing, you know, the direction that the administration wanted them to go in. It creates a sense of chaos, and I would just say sort of an unpredictable environment in which to work. I think if you're in that position, you would prefer much more stability within the White House staff because that probably makes your job easier.
All right, so you're going to continue to track this then in the years ahead?
Yes, I am.
And so I guess it's impossible to really predict what might happen, but I wonder if a huge amount of turnover, as you say, 34% in the first year, could that portend maybe a little more stability in the second and third years?
One would only hope, because generally what you see in the five other presidencies is that there's a big uptick from year one to year two. So if history was your guide, you would say that Trump's turnover should be higher the second year. I have some caution in the extent that his first year turnover was so high that it's hard for me to believe that he could lose, you know, 34% or more, which would then have him at roughly 68% of the people that he initially appointed had departed. I mean, that's almost three quarters. That's extraordinary, and I think that, you know, creates a chaotic environment, and it's not easy. The other thing I should point out is I'm only tracking this subset of senior staff, but it's important to point out that when somebody like John Kelly moves in and Ryan Priebus leaves, it's not just those two individuals that are trading places. There are generally many other junior staffers that will leave when Ryan Priebus leaves because John Kelly's going to want to bring his own people. So, you know, my data captures this single data set of turnover, but actually there's a domino effect many times when a principal leaves. And so there's even more turnover, and I think there's a loss in, when you talked about, you know, how would people in this senior executive service feel, there's a loss of relationships because, I mean, these people are sort of working day-to-day within the government, and when they leave, you know, it's very difficult to substitute personal relations. You can't really transfer that. You can tell someone how you did your job, but you can't transfer sort of the human capital that you had in your particular job. And so that, I think, creates even more disruption.
Katie Dunn-Tempest is Senior Fellow in Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
We'll post this interview along with a link to her study at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.